And good morning. You are tuned to KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna, and it is time once again for the Kenai Conversation. I'm your host, Shaylin Cochran, and thank you so much for joining us this morning. Now, today is going to be all about boating and paddle sports, and we're very excited to have this conversation this morning. It's that time of year. It's time to get the canoes out, the kayaks out, the stand-up paddle boards. Whatever you've got to get out on the water is a good excuse to get out on the water. And to help us along with this conversation this morning, we've got in the studio, Matt Bahala is with us. And Matt, thanks so much for coming in this morning.
Yeah, good morning, Shaylin.
I'll turn on the correct microphone.
Oh yeah, well, and say hello. Hello.
And Matt, you are you're an instructor. You are an ACA, that's an American Canoe Association certified instructor. You are also the operator of the Immersion Paddling Academy here on the Kenai Peninsula, IPA for short. And again, thank you so much for being here. And I know that to get started here, this is going to be a fun conversation. So we're going to learn a lot about kayaking safety, boating safety, different types of the sport, the differences between different kinds of kayaking. We're hoping to get into some of where you can go to do this fun stuff, the different kinds of trips you can take. And if you have any interesting stories about trips you've taken, if you have any questions about how to get into this kind of activity, or if you have some fun stories, we'd love to hear from you as well. 690-1687 is the number. Give us a call anytime. We'd love to have you in on the conversation as well. And Matt, just to get started here, you've spent a lot of time on the water in the boats. You've managed to really carve out a big chunk of your life to put into this sport. And I guess just to start off, how did you get into kayaking and paddle sports, and then later on into the instruction part of things?
Yeah, well, initially, I got into kayaking, just the recreation side of it. When I was in chiropractic school still in Oregon, I did what most people do when they get into the sport. I just went and bought a used boat and a bunch of used equipment and kind of plunged in and quickly got served up, realized there's a lot more to it than just floating down the river. So when I came back to the peninsula, having grown up here and, spent a lot of my childhood in the coastal environment in that, that intertidal zone and the break zone, with commercial fishing, I was like, man, this would be a dynamic place to spend some time in a kayak. So, started looking into it, and, I went to one of the recreational equipment sellers,
one
of those big box places, and immediately talked to the expert on the floor, and
sure,
and they sold me a kayak. And then I the smartest thing I did is before I plunged into the water is I signed up for some instruction. And I did that with Tom Pogson, who now lives in Kodiak, but at the time was in Homer, and he has Alaska Kayak School. He still runs Alaska Kayak School off of Kodiak and does some things, but got together with Tom, and basically it was a 3-day course where it was a lot of rescue training, just basic strokes and maneuvers, and then went into a lot of the just total seamanship stuff with navigation. And so it was a real good introduction to what is needed, what the knowledge base you need and the skill base you need to be safe with sea kayaking.
And that, of course, is always the first priority, even above having fun, because if you're doing stuff safely, it's a lot easier to have fun if you're not worried about stuff, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's one of those where the more prepared you are, the more likely you will make it home.
That's right. And that's always the first goal. Again, the Kenai Conversation this morning, we're joined with Matt Bahala, and we're talking all about kayaking and some different paddle sports. And this is where I kind of want to get the conversation started this morning. I've been doing it for a couple of years. I got into it the way most people do. You buy, a cheap old boat, and you just kind of start paddling around, and then you discover this kind of world out there that's bigger and bigger and more exciting and more dynamic than you may have imagined. And just to start, for folks who maybe aren't so familiar with this this area of recreation, when you get into a kayak, they can do a lot of things okay, or you can get different kinds of kayaks that do specific things extraordinarily well. And I guess if you could just kind of break it down into the different types of kayaking and boating there are, and what those differences are in the boats and that kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Talking with about kayaks first, because you know there's more than just kayaks in the paddle sport world. There's,
right.
We have canoes. SUP is really big right now.
That's stand-up paddleboarding. Yeah. Yeah.
And then even drift boats and rowboat. I mean those are paddle boats. So, essentially, with the kayak world, if you wanted to break it down really simplistically, there are sea kayaks, there are whitewater river kayaks, there are recreational kayaks, and then there are surf kayaks. I mean, those are some big categories, but just going into some of the basics of what defines a sea kayak, they're generally longer, in the range of probably 15 to 18, 19 feet long. In order to fit the rough definition, there's essentially a rear and forward sealed hatch, so that if you do capsize and come out of your boat, the boat's not going to sink. That's an important part of the recovery process,
especially out on the ocean.
You know, the rescue training, being able to self-rescue, and then after that, you know, it's pretty open. There's a lot of different designs out there. The kayaks that I generally lean towards because of how they perform in rough water are the British hull design, or the Greenland hull design.
And what's special about that?
So they generally are a little narrower than some of the other ocean-going kayaks. It's a shallow V through the middle of it, and then pretty sharp prow. And then they have quite a bit of rocker also. So that means from bow to stern, they aren't flat. So there's a little bit of a curve there, so that as you're going up and down waves and waves are coming up behind you, there's more stability through more dynamic water.
This all sounds like completely the polar opposite of the boat that I have, which is, again, from one of those big box type retailers that I just picked up on sale. And it was one of those kind of, you know what, I've wanted to do this. Here's a number that I'm not scared of, and I'm just going to do it. And what I found out in buying what you would call a recreational kayak is that it's sort of a jack of all trades. Mm-hmm. You can dabble near the shore in the ocean. You can have some fun on the lake. You can go on some mild rivers. Doesn't do any of those things particularly well. Mm-hmm. And so I guess, how important is it to know sort of the limit? Of course, it's important to know the limitations of what your different canoes or your different boats can do. But for you, how does that come into play? Like where is the limit for you? Terms of what crossover means and how that can be done safely.
Sure. Honestly, to be totally frank and honest, I think that the recreational kayaks are dangerous for anything other than flatwater lakes. Because if you're in moving water, they don't have the safety features necessary that if you were to get pinned, that you would, one, be able to extract yourself from the boat, and two, get the boat out. One of the main safety features for a river boat is that there's in between your legs, there's a central pillar. And that's a structural thing and a safety thing, because if a boat gets pinned against a rock or a log or whatever, even with a what we would, you know, call a fairly mild flow, that boat can crumple like a beer can. And with your legs trapped in there. And that's actually, in the early days of whitewater kayaking, that was a major safety thing. I mean, a lot of people lost their lives that way. So those recreation kayaks are built for not the river.
They're built for very mild use. And I can say, that in my own experience, it's a little unnerving when you get into some rough water in a boat that's maybe not totally designed for it, and you can mm-hmm. feel it kind of flexing and moving around in a little bit. And it's one of those things that tips you off that, all right, maybe I've reached the limitations of what this device can do. And if I want to continue into this sport and do some more things, maybe it's time to look at some different kinds of equipment. And so starting there and moving along, something that, again, it's a very basic question, and for folks out there who know this, I'll apologize because this is a question that I'll ask completely out of ignorance. What is with the fins on the bottom of the kayak? What does that do? Why do I want that?
Okay. Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good question. Absolutely. Because there's a huge spectrum of design there. So if we're looking at sea kayaks, there's the difference of having a rudder and having a skeg. Conceptually, they should be used for essentially the same thing, but in essence, how people use a rudder is for steering, but it's designed to be used just to correct your weather cocking or lee cocking, which is if you have a wind coming from the side, it keeps you on course because as the boat's going through the water, the front of the boat is cutting through the water, so it's relatively engaged and stuck. Whereas the water that's behind the boat is sort of this swirly, unstable water. And so the stern of the boat isn't as stuck there. And so if there's a side wind, it can blow the stern downwind.
So it keeps you on course and keeps you stable.
Yeah. So if you set the rudder at the right angle, it'll hold you. You can just paddle forward without doing corrective strokes and it'll keep you there. A lot of the time, especially with newer kayakers, they use that rudder, overuse the rudder, and they use it for steering rather than doing strokes and maneuvers to change their course. And so it's great. Their rudders are good for people that don't have a lot of experience and maybe don't have the skill set yet to do the maneuvers with their paddle. But it really is just supposed to be intended to keep you on course. And that's where a skeg comes into play. That's what a skeg is used for also. And the difference there is the rudder, everyone pretty much knows where that is. That's on the back of the boat and you can swing it side to side. A skeg drops down from somewhere behind the cockpit of the boat where you're sitting, and it is a blade that is retractable, and you can get it set at just the perfect distance down, so enough is exposed that it'll essentially lock the stern of the boat into that swirly water a little bit more. And so again, you can paddle, just forward paddle without doing a bunch of corrective strokes, and it'll keep you on course.
And makes those movements good and efficient so that you're using every bit of energy as well as you can.
And I prefer the skeg over the rudder because, in rougher water, a rudder's out of the water half the time, you know, whereas the skeg's engaged.
If you're doing it right.
Yeah.
Now, is that kind of stuff, is that just for ocean kayaks, or would you find that kind of stuff on boats that are more river or lake oriented?
That would be, you might see it on some of the lake boats because, you know, you'd see it there. You don't see that on river boats so much. And then on surf specific boats, so ocean surfing kayaks, those have fins like a surfboard also. And it's the same idea with that, as it's helping you lock in so that the stern doesn't slide out.
Because when you're out there on even a 17 foot boat feels pretty big when it's sitting on top of your car and you're trying to haul it around.
Absolutely.
But when you get out on the ocean, you're just a little itty bitty thing out there bobbing around in that great big ocean. And
exactly.
You can feel pretty powerless.
Yes.
In a big hurry.
Yes.
But that's kind of the fun of it, right?
It is. It is. That's going back to what attracted me to kayaking. That's really my ultimate goal is to just get away from the world because, you know, it's amazing how, once you get out in the middle of Prince William Sound or Kachemak Bay, and you know, the noises of the world sort of get smaller and the distractions go away. And especially if you're on a multi-day trip, you know, 2 or 3 days in, you realize how secluded you are, how, you know, and how insignificant you really are compared to the power of the ocean or the rivers or, you know, whatever body of water you're on.
You can really get out to remote places and really kind of feel your place in the world a little bit differently.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And so we've been talking a little bit about the ocean kayaks, but you know, so those are the big long ones that we see sometimes. And the other ones, so for the river kayaks, those are a lot shorter, right?
Typically, yeah, and they vary depending on what kind of river kayaking you're doing. And so there's a whole world of different shapes there that we could talk for multiple hours about that. But in general, yes, they're shorter. One of the main differences that they generally don't have a sealed storage space, because they're shorter, and then it wouldn't really be realistic. They have started making a few boats, river boats, that do have a storage space in the back. That's helpful because then you don't need to put flotation there. But that's one of the things with river kayaks. Generally, you have to have airbags in there so that if you do capsize and end up swimming, your boat doesn't sink to the bottom and is unrecoverable. So those airbags help to just keep it a little bit afloat so that your friends can get you to shore, or you can get yourself to shore preferably, and then empty your boat out and jump back in.
Emptying your boat out and jumping back in, that's a pretty common process, depending on the roughness of the water and your skill on it.
Yeah, you know, you absolutely shouldn't be ashamed if you swim, because it's you know,
that makes me feel so much better.
Yeah, you're on that line of your skill. Now, if you swim all the time, your friends might start going, "Hey, buddy, maybe you should learn how to roll, or maybe you should figure out how to get in and out of an eddy without capsizing." But yeah, the reality is that everyone is a beginner at some point in this sport, and having some good instruction is important, because those are some real foundational skills that if you get those set, you can do a lot of things, do it safely, and do it with some confidence, and not go into a situation completely over your head and scared.
And over your waders, as it were.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tune to the Kenai Conversation this morning on KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna. We're speaking with Matt Pahala. We're talking all about kayaking and different paddle sports. It's just that time of year. It's a great time to get out on the water. Things are warming up. The waters are they're still pretty chilly, but it's still a lot of fun to get out there. Lots of great stuff to see. And, you mentioned, I guess I'll throw the numbers out, 690-1687 is the number if you'd like to hop in on the conversation. If you have some questions about getting into the sport, if you have some questions about equipment or some different stories maybe that you have, we would love to hear those. 690-1687 is the number. And I guess this is a good time. You mentioned the idea of kind of making sure that you know sort of what you're getting into, and that's a great transition into for folks who are like me, who are, you know, right at the beginning of kind of getting into this and have maybe been on the water a few times but haven't had like formal instruction or anything like that. What would you say to someone in terms of, you know, skills you need and stuff you ought to know for folks who are just curious about getting into this for the first time?
Yeah, that's a good question. Thanks for that one. The nice thing with kayaking and all the paddle sports, frankly, canoeing, SUP, kayaking, they all, there's the connection of body, boat, and blade. And so you're sitting in the boat, you have your paddle, whether it's a single or a double paddle, kayaking or canoeing or SUP. And that is how you connect with the water. And so the transfer in between the blade and the boat is your body. So, there are certainly skills and maneuvers and the proper way to do different strokes and maneuvers. Some of them are used more for whitewater. Some of them are used more for ocean kayaking and then other flat water. But essentially, the stroke that you're going to use 95% of the time is just a forward stroke. So there are clinics that are days long where they go break down the nuances of a really efficient forward stroke. But that's a strokes and maneuvers class is a great place to start, because you learn how to paddle forward, you learn how to paddle backwards, you learn how to stop, you learn how to move your boat sideways. If you can do those things, then, I mean, that's the very basic stuff that you need to be able to do. And with beginners, in a class of people who have never sat in a boat before, if on that first day, if I can just get them thinking about the articulation of their blade and the connection of the boat body and blade, I've done my job for the day, because it's whelming to have a bunch of different strokes and maneuvers thrown at you. And you're at that point where you're just trying to figure out how to hold the paddle
and stay dry.
Yeah. So a lot of times we start with instruction on flat water, either in the pool through the winter. We're going to have some of that going. But then on just a flat water lake is a great venue, whether it's with a sea kayak or a river boat or a lake boat, because it just takes some of the environment out of it. You know, it's kind of levels the field a little bit, so that you're not worrying about what the water's doing so much, and you can focus on what you're doing. And then with a one day strokes maneuvers course, you can move into some more dynamic water. I mean, I've done that a lot, where it's one day on the lake and then take a person on a short trip, say across Kachemak Bay. And if you have the proper safety equipment, personal protective equipment, It's a safe trip to do. A lot of people get nervous about Kachemak Bay because, I mean, there have been a lot of boating accidents. A lot of people have died on Kachemak Bay, but it came down to they weren't really prepared. They didn't have the equipment they needed to be safe, and they didn't have the skills to do what they were doing when they were doing it.
That can be an arduous journey. I've never paddled across. I've loaded my boat onto a much bigger boat and gone across and had fun, but never done it myself under, powered by Armstrong was not the method that day for me.
Well, you know, anytime you want, I'll take you.
All right. Let's I love it.
Because that's the other nice thing is with getting into this and learning the different safety equipment that's needed and skills, I have accumulated what it takes to take someone safely, because I've had multiple friends where it's like, well, I have a boat, but I don't have a dry suit or PFD. And then you're like, well, we can't do the trip. So, you know, by having the extra equipment, that it's nice.
It's nice to be able to outfit the noobs.
Yeah.
So that's a good part to bring up too, I guess, is, again, you know, this is kind of aimed at folks who are kind of just getting into it and have paddled around a little bit and are looking to hopefully expand that and take advantage of all the really great opportunities there are to participate in this sport. And we'll talk about some of those opportunities later. But what would you say is the sort of the basic safety checklist in terms of equipment and what you need to be mentally prepared for a given trip, say across Kachemak Bay?
So One of the mottos that we live by is prepare for the swim.
Makes sense. I mean, really. Makes sense.
If you're not prepared to go in the water, you're not prepared to go.
Yeah.
So for sea kayaking, especially if you're any distance offshore, kind of the minimal level of safety equipment that you need, personal protective equipment, would be, well, first of all, the PFD. I don't care what boating you're doing or what body of water you're on. If you don't have a PFD, it's just a risk you don't want to take. So I know that's a big push and campaign ongoing, because people still, you'll see them out in a canoe
hear stories. I heard a story just earlier this week, or perhaps it was late last week, about some guys way out west off the coast of Nome that still looking for them. Went off kayaking without PFDs and no plan, and it can turn bad in a hurry.
It can. So, you know, PFD, absolutely. I also, in the prepare for the swim, there is nowhere in Alaska where the water is warm. So, where people, the mistake that, or the what people think of as cold water, the danger is hypothermia. That's the one that comes up. But really the one that takes most lives is shock drowning. And that's that moment that you hit the water, there's a reflex where you gasp and you breathe in water. And it's that, you know, it's usually a half cup of water or less, and it can kill you. So that's where a dry suit is helpful, because that gives you another layer of protection from that. It seems to give you a little bit of that barrier where you don't have that reflex quite as much. Helmets are nice if you're in any kind of rocky zone. If you're near shore, rocks hurt for sure. Some gloves are usually pretty necessary because your hands will get cold.
It doesn't take very many drips of that cold glacial river water before you just can't feel your hands anymore.
Yeah, exactly. So, and then underneath the dry suit, you'd want to have some kind of poly layers or some, I often wear some light wool. I just like the feel of wool more than I do poly, but something that will insulate if you do get a little bit damp with sweat on the inside. The nice thing with some of the newer materials, Gore-Tex and some of the other breathable materials, is the dry suits are pretty comfortable. I mean, I've done 10-hour days paddling and been pretty comfortable if you get the layering right underneath. And I've paddled in the middle of July and the 1st of January. So it's nice. I mean, it's one of those things. If you stay dry, you'll stay warm. And that's a big part of it.
And you'll stay comfortable and you'll be able to have a lot more fun for a lot longer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's the kind of the personal protective equipment. There's a whole world of other rescue and safety equipment. If you're on the rivers, the minimum that you want is a throw bag, a throw rope, to save someone that might be floating downstream, or, you know, a lot of different uses there. And then, especially if you start getting into bigger water, you want to have at least one unpin kit in the group that you'd go with.
And what's that?
So the first part of it's the throw bag, the throw line. And then the other things in there that you'd want are carabiners. So you want at least two locking carabiners and two that aren't locking. Some webbing so that you can, basically the webbing goes around some kind of a stationary object like a rock or a tree trunk or something. And then you hook in the some pulleys onto that, and then the line goes through that, and then you can hook that onto the boat and then unpin the boat. So it's an unpin kit because it's if a boat gets pinned in a snag or rocks or whatnot.
Okay.
So you got a few pulleys, some carabiners, some pressic line, which is a short loop of line that you can essentially shorten up the pulley where it's located, and then put multiple pulleys into a system. So you can go from a one-to-one to a, if you have enough pulleys and enough kits, you can get a pretty good mechanical advantage on it and pull against the river.
And really get some work done,
yeah,
as it were.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, that's whitewater. As far as ocean kayaking, you want a bilge pump, you want to have a sponge to kind of bail out your boat if once you capsize and then wet exit and re-enter, you know, you want to be able to get that out. A paddle float's nice because if you don't have a roll, that's one of the self-rescue techniques, is using a paddle float, which is a float you put on the end of your paddle and then hold onto it and essentially climb up onto your paddle while you're holding onto it with your boat, and then kind of get up on the back of the boat and then into the cockpit. So there's that. The other thing with sea kayaking is the whole navigation side of it. So charts and compasses and those types of equipment. And then the signaling is also a big part of it. So if you're on the ocean, VHF radio, a whistle, some flares. There's a lot that goes into a kit. It all depends on what you want to do as far as how big that kit has to be.
Right.
You know, if you're doing an expedition, you're going to have a lot more stuff. But if you're day paddling and you're not going to be far from shore, the kit's going to shrink.
Yeah.
You know, if you have to carry your own water because there's not any source of fresh water, then, you know, things get bigger quickly.
Absolutely. And it's one of those ironic things. You're out on the water and you're carrying all this water. And
yeah. Yeah.
So speaking of water, this is something that I think, I don't know this. My imagination tells me, my inclination tells me that something that maybe might keep people away is, again, this idea of, I'm in a boat, but it's a very small boat, and I don't necessarily feel that safe in it, and I don't want to get wet. That's why I'm in a boat to begin with. And so maybe you could talk about that. How is it, do you find when you're teaching classes and introducing folks to the sport for the first time, is it a big learning curve to know how to safely get out of the boat in the water, to know, you know, if something happens, if you capsize, roll, that is it tough to get folks over that hill and get them confident in their ability to, under whatever circumstance, get back in the boat and keep going?
So performing a safe wet exit is, it's a pretty easy skill. Anyone can do it that can hold their breath. But I would say that for the brand new person, that is the one thing that people are terrified of going underwater, and rightfully so, because we don't breathe underwater. So that's where we start with brand new paddlers. And I like doing it in the pool because the water is a little bit warmer and it's just a little bit more controlled environment. But yeah, we start with wet exits, and so it's where I'm there and I roll the person over. They're sitting in their boat and I'm just like, okay, I'm going to roll you over and I'm going to roll you back up so that they can get the feeling of going underwater and coming back up. And then we go to, I'm going to roll you over and you're just going to wet exit. And so there are certain steps in the proper way of doing a wet exit to do it safely, to learn to do it safely. And that's basically coming out in a protected position. So when you go over, you want to lean as far forward as you can. And then we start without a spray skirt on, but then we quickly add the spray skirt to learn that. So if you have the spray skirt, you pull your spray skirt, and then under control, still in that forward tucked position, you just push the boat away from you. Essentially, it's like taking off a pair of pants. And the reason why you'd want to be in that forward tucked position is it's especially for if you're in a creek or in the surf zone, intertidal zone, where there might be rocks, is your face is kind of a soft area that leaves you pretty vulnerable, your face and your neck. And so you want to protect those. And so going into that forward tuck position is a more protected, because you have the PFD that's protecting anything from hitting you on the back. And then if you're wearing a helmet, then the back of your head is protected as well. So
tons of skills, tons of stuff to keep in mind. And we want to continue the conversation. We're going to take a quick break. We're talking about kayaking and paddle sports, the safety things that you need to keep in mind, how to get into the sport if you're someone who is a little bit interested in it, or maybe you've been out on the water a few times like me. You want to see what else is out there for you and what skills you would need to do that. Speaking this morning with Matt Pahala, he is a level 4 certified instructor with the American Canoe Association. He also runs the Immersion Paddling Academy here on the Kenai Peninsula. We're going to continue our conversation with Matt after a quick break. Stay with us. And welcome back. You are tuned to KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. It's the Kenai Conversation. I'm your host, Shaylin Cochran. Been talking about kayaking, canoeing, water sports, all that fun stuff, as it is that time of year. Having a lot of fun this morning talking with Matt Pahala. He's a kayaking instructor. He runs the Immersion Paddling Academy here on the Kenai Peninsula. And throughout the first part of the show, we spent a lot of time talking about kind of the safety things, stuff that folks need to think about if they're just getting into the sport or would like to kind of do a little bit more. If you've floated on the river a couple of times or spent some time on some lakes, what do you need to think about if you want to expand that, go on some longer trips? What I want to talk about as we move into the second half of the program is what some of those trips are around the Kenai Peninsula, because one of the cool things about this place is how close we are to rivers, lakes, oceans, no shortage of opportunities for some of these water sports. And Matt, of course, you spend a lot of time doing the more ocean-going stuff, but again, you know, for folks who are just kind of on the beginning end of the spectrum on this stuff, what are some good sort of light ocean trips that people can manage if they don't have a ton of experience?
So, yeah, there's a whole world there. One of my favorite places to paddle is down in Kachemak Bay. And that's probably because I grew up in Anchor Point, and it's a great place. If you don't want to or don't necessarily have the skill to safely get across Kachemak Bay just by leaving the end of the spit, you can take a water taxi over. There's a ton of day trip things that you can do where you can get dropped off and picked up. Halibut Cove is amazing. I mean, there is so much to do there. Not only, you know, that's really gentle paddling, but there's some super dynamic water there with how the channel into the lagoon that runs like a river, especially with higher tides. It's just epic water. And it's really fun in a 18-foot kayak to break out of an eddy into current like that and
really get some speed.
Yeah.
And go fast.
Yeah. It's amazing. It's amazing how fast a 18-foot kayak will turn with that kind of current. So that's one of my favorite places in Kachemak Bay. But there in Kachemak Bay, they have, I don't know exactly the entity that put it all together, but there is the Kachemak Bay Water Trail.
Yes.
And, you know, you can basically beach hop around the entire Kachemak Bay. And I haven't done the whole thing yet, but I think that would be a really fun endeavor to just do the entire loop. That being said, over in like Sadie Cove and that area is really beautiful too. And there's some near shore trips that you can do. Seldovia is always great because that gives you access to the beginning of the outer coast. So people with more skill, that gets really dynamic really fast. Seward is great. That one of my all-time favorite trips that I've been on was paddling from Seward out to where Bear Glacier is, camping there, and then camped there the first night, and then we headed on out toward Cape Ialik, and then returned and camped again at Bear Glacier. So that's a great one. There's a ton of expedition and camping type of kayaking that can be done through that whole fjord area. Whittier is wonderful. I have a really good friend who guides out of Whittier. And that's the other thing, is if you don't have the equipment and you don't feel comfortable picking out your course and doing all the navigation and all that, I'd highly recommend just hiring a guide and doing, you know, day trip or an extended 2 or 3 day trip. They're more than happy to do that. And if you don't have to come up with all the outfitting yourself, that's the way to go.
Oh yeah. Having somebody do the planning. You've talked a little bit about these expedition trips and longer trips, and I've never been on any more than, I guess I've done an overnight from my kayak before, but is it tough to go on a multiple day thing? I mean, you can't fit that much stuff with you. So what do you need to think about when you're packing for one of these trips?
Size does matter. Absolutely. With all this type of the expedition type of kayaking, you do have to be a little bit of a gearhead, because I guess you don't have to be, but I think most people end up being that, because you go on these trips and everyone's looking at what everyone else has and trying to improve it. And so, over the years, I've got my kit down pretty compact, where, you know, it has to fit through a 8.5 to 9 inch hole to get into the kayak. So the big puffy sleeping bag doesn't really work that well. You have to go with more the minimalist or lightweight stuff. And as we were talking about before, of course, the price point goes up as they use less material, which seems a little bit backwards.
A little counterintuitive. It weighs far less and costs far more, but
yeah,
that's how it goes.
Yeah. But it's not daunting by any means. When I got into it, I was using my basic backpacking camp kit, and it worked pretty well. But over the years, I've, you know, upgraded a couple things that are a little more specific. With my tent, I don't use a freestanding tent anymore. It's basically, it stuffs down. It's a single wall, three season tent that stuffs down into almost nothing. And I can use just a couple of, if I had to, I could use a couple of sticks to hold it up. I mean, that's not being freestanding. And that, of course, is a little bit limiting, but there are a lot of smaller tents that can fit into a kayak hold. Sleeping bags are one of those things that people love their down sleeping bags, but really the down, once it gets wet, is kind of a pain to deal with. So we do usually recommend that you use some of the synthetic fiber sleeping bags. And then, you know, food's always an issue. How much food do I bring? And, you know, there's a lot of dehydrated stuff that we pack. And so, it's everyone figures it out.
Everybody figures it out. And that's a lot of the fun in those trips, is planning them out and laying everything out and figuring out what you need, what you can take, what you can't take. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of it too. Tune to the Kenai Conversation this morning here on KDLL. We're speaking with Matt Bahal. We've been talking about all sorts of things related to paddle sports, kayaking, canoeing, different trips you can take, a lot of the safety things that you need to keep in mind, perhaps if you are new to the sport or are interested in getting into the sport. Matt, you run the Immersion Paddling Academy, and I would love to hear a little bit about this academy that you put on, and I guess just tell us a little bit about what it is, and if folks are interested in learning some of these safety procedures and stuff they need to know to get out onto the water, how do they go about it?
Yeah, so as you've stated, my certification is in coastal kayaking, sea kayaking, so that is the focus of what I'm teaching. The nice thing is there is a lot of crossover in the strokes and maneuvers. So people that aren't really interested in sea kayaking can still get a lot of benefit from some of the strokes and maneuvers classes that we do. So this winter, we don't have any dates set yet, but I've been kind of working with Parks and Rec and community schools to try to get a few classes on the schedule. What I ultimately would like to do is have classes that build on one another. So some consecutive classes for people that may not have any skills at all. We can start them at the very beginning and go through, throw a number out, 6-week course where maybe once a week have a pool session. And then by the end of that, have a good amount of skills under a person's belt. So that's the winter activity that we do. In the summers, typically the class, I kind of mentioned it earlier, is a real standard way of doing it is a one-day class on flat water, doing strokes and maneuvers and rescue training and getting some of those basics, and then doing a trip the next day so that it's not just all boring classroom stuff. You know, it's like the whole purpose of doing it is to get a little bit of confidence and do it under some instruction and with some leadership where, you know, if you do get into a situation, you can count on someone to get you out of that situation.
Yeah. Do you have anybody in your classes maybe they take that first spill in the water and they say, nope, that's enough. Never for me. Never again. Does that ever happen, or do you find it that people, once they get in the water and get in the boat and get a feel for it, they just sort of take to it?
I think that most people take to it. There's definitely a whole spectrum of anxiety for that initial spill, but that's why we start with wet exits, very first thing, you know, and that's important because after you've done a couple of wet exits, you get really comfortable, and nobody likes to capsize. There aren't, you know, except for those goofy people that that are in rolling competitions. You know, there's that, but no, I mean the goal is to stay upright, and I haven't had anyone back out of it because of fear, and I definitely have dealt with people with a high level of anxiety, but that's where you just go slow. You don't want to push anyone into something they don't feel comfortable doing. And some people, it's like, no problem. I've grown up around water. I have no problem putting my head underwater and staying there and holding my breath. Other people, it is. So you just do what they feel comfortable with, but also giving them the right skills. And I think once people figure out that, first of all, they can hold their breath underwater for a lot longer than we think, and it's not hard to get out of a boat, then the anxiety goes away. And that's a misconception a lot of people have, is that if you have a spray skirt on, it's impossible to get out or it's really hard to get out. But it's about repetition and getting comfortable so that you don't panic in the real situation.
You've talked about spray skirts a couple times. What exactly is a spray skirt and what does it do?
The spray skirt fits, it's generally made out of neoprene, fits around the torso, and then it goes out and covers the cockpit or the opening where you sit. And the purpose there is that, especially in moving water or waves, that you don't get water sloshed in the cockpit.
So not totally waterproof, but a good barrier.
Not totally waterproof, but you should stay pretty dry if it's on.
That'll be a worthwhile investment for me, perhaps, as I look down the road.
You might want one.
Just to, you know, to make sure that I'm serious about this and really committed. we've talked about, I know that your sort of area of expertise is more on the ocean side of things, but you know, we're here on the Central Kenai Peninsula and we've got a couple of really great rivers to paddle. And I'm sure that you've been down both the Kasilof and the Kenai, and yes. I've been down the Kasilof, but I guess, you know, those are really accessible, really beautiful places. I guess maybe you could talk a little bit about what you need, the kind of boat you would need, and the sorts of skills and stuff you want to bring to the table before you tackle something like that.
Well, first of all, I think if you've never done it, you should go with someone who has.
Sure.
And I think, you know, you should probably paddle with someone always, just safety in numbers.
Right.
But so having an appropriate boat for a river, we talked about that a little bit, the safety features that mm-hmm. you'd see in a river boat, PFD, helmet, all those basic personal protective equipment things. It's debatable whether or not you should have a dry suit. It's nice because if you do swim, you're going to stay dry. But as long as you have extra clothing and, you know, you're on a river where if you do get wet, you can get out and change. I think minimally you should have at least a splash top, which is kind of a waterproof barrier on the top, but not necessarily on the bottom. Throw bag, unpin kit, and boat paddle.
Boat paddle and yeah. and a great attitude.
Great attitude, exactly. As far as skills, you know, a lot of the Kenai and Kasilof, they're rivers that if you want, you can just go straight down them. You don't have to do anything fancy of like getting in and out of eddies, but you should understand what an eddy is and how behind obstacles in the river there's going to be, how the current's going to change. And getting in and out of those is one of those skills that everyone should have if they're going to spend any time on the river, because that's a safety thing.
Let's talk a little bit about that, because you know, if you've never been on a kayak on the river, they move pretty quick. Whether you want them to or not, they keep going. If you're ready to get out, it doesn't matter. The river right. keeps going. And so you do need to know how to get out and talk a little bit about that skill set of getting in and out of your boat on a moving river.
Yeah. So actually in and out of the boat itself.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the very first time that I went kayaking, I didn't know what it was to eddy out. I thought, who's eddy? I'm yeah. not here with eddy.
Sure, sure. Yeah, so that an eddy forms behind, say we'll take a rock. If there's a rock in the middle of the river, there's going to be... behind the rock, the current is going to go the opposite direction of the flow of the river, the downstream flow. And that's just because of that obstacle. And it, essentially, there's a hole that's made by the rock, and then the water is filling that hole back up. And so that flow is that refilling.
And it kind of creates this nice, calm little pool.
Yeah, often it is. And so it's a spot where you can eddy out, which means you cross the eddy line, which is kind of that zone where the current changes direction. And that's pretty a tumultuous place. You want to get across that really fast. But you break across it, with the bow of your boat. And then, we call it mooning the current. So it's essentially presenting the bottom of your boat to the direction the current's flowing. So whether you're getting in or out of the eddy, you want to moon the current, and that will essentially allow the boat, because of the shape of the hull and what's happening with the current, it'll just carve into that. The basic maneuver there is it's going on edge, mooning the current, and typically using a low brace to stabilize if you do start to, you know, lose a little bit of balance.
Yeah. Yeah. An important skill for getting in and out and getting off of these fast moving rivers, because there's so many good places to stop yeah. along the way.
And it's one of those things that until you want to do it, you don't really know that you should know how to do it.
That's right. That's right. For folks, I've been down portions of the Kenai River, and of course there are great rafting trips to take. Do you need to know how to, like, really hardcore white water raft to tackle some of these places?
You know, that's one of the really nice things about both the Kasilof and the Kenai River. There are sections of both where at certain water levels, they can be pretty dynamic and you need a little bit more skill. But they're both class 2 rivers, which, I mean, might sound a little bit innocuous. They can definitely, eat your lunch, but they're good rivers to start to build those foundational skills. And, and then be able to move up to more difficult, challenging things. And so the Kisilov is a nice one, especially at about this time of year with this water level, because there are a lot of rocks that are exposed that have small eddies behind them, but it's not so low that it's really bony and you're bouncing off of stuff and dragging bottom. So this is, like, right now is about my favorite time to run the Kisilov, because it's a real skill building water level.
Yeah, that's good to know. I wanted to ask a little bit about that. You know, we're at this time of year, and of course, you know, whether you're rivers especially depend on what the water level is as to what the experience is going to be like when you're out there on the boat. But this time of year, what the Kisilov, you say, is a good one this time of year? The Kenai, same kind of thing on the Kenai? Or
every year is going to be different. So, I mean, it really does depend on snowpack and how fast it's melting and all of those things, how much rain we've had. But yeah, in general, right now is pretty good. As the water level comes up, both the Kenai and the Kisilov, some of those rocks get covered up. And so it can turn into just, you know, we're running the river and there's not a whole lot of obstacles or areas that offer anything that's really interesting as your skill builds. But that's where, like I say, they're good rivers to kind of cut your teeth. And because even the areas where there are some more challenging things, they aren't so challenging that it's prohibitive for someone who doesn't have the skills.
Not a whole lot of life flashing before eyes. Maybe occasionally.
Occasionally. I mean, that's the thing is, you know, I don't want to scare anyone away, but I mean, the calmest river on the mellowest day
can still offer some extraordinary challenges.
You're never stronger than water.
That's,
you will never be stronger than the river.
That's absolutely
right. And the river doesn't care.
The river doesn't care. The ocean doesn't care. The lake might care a little bit.
It might.
Might care a little bit.
Yeah.
We've got just a couple of minutes left, Matt, and I guess I wanted to ask if you could maybe just kind of put you on the spot here. Sum up, what's your favorite trip that you've taken on a kayak?
Wow.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Well, last summer I guided a group from New Jersey in Prince William Sound, and we were down by the Chenega Glacier is where we started, and we camped there for a couple days and then paddled back. Camped a night on Chenega Island. There's an easement there. Chenega Island is owned by one of the Alaska Native organizations. But there is an easement that you can camp about halfway up. And so we camped there and then went up to Crafton Island, I believe it was, and then got picked up there by water taxi the following day. So it was a 5-day trip. And I saw just amazing glaciers. I was with some really cool people from Jersey that were high-level paddlers. They were really skilled. So everyone could take care of themselves. I was just kind of along to give them the Alaskan flair, essentially.
Now, what does that include? Is that extra in the package?
That includes a big bottle of Kirkland margarita mix and glacial ice.
A perfect end to a perfect day on the water, right?
Yes.
That's right. Well, Matt, we're just about out of time this hour, but I want to thank you so much for coming on and sharing some of your expertise in this area and letting folks know a little bit more about this sport that's, again, ample opportunities to take advantage of here on the Kenai Peninsula. We hope you've learned a little bit of something. I've learned a lot this morning as well. So again, Matt, thanks so much for being on this morning.
Absolutely. And Immersion Paddling Academy is on Facebook and also immersionpaddlingacademy.com.
All right. Check those out for all the safety tips so that you can go out and enjoy the waters around the Kenai Peninsula safely all summer long. This has been the Kenai Conversation. I'm Shaylin Cochran. This is KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. Have a great morning.